Hello there.
You listening to Trek FM?
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to TFM's local watering hole coming at you from Eternia. Hopefully you guys can hear us and we don't get interrupted by any large talking tigers. I'm just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing. So excited to be with Rye Paulson as we are going to talk about Masters of the Universe 2026 edition.
I am so excited. I feel like I have all the power to talk about this new Masters of the Universe. I hope you checked out our episode last week on the 1987 version, and I'm excited to talk whether or not this is a better rendition of the iconic toy figure and TV show.
Yes. No, I'm super excited to dive into this with you. As my friend Pip would say, I am stoked to talk about this one. But before we dive in, of course, find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening to this, just subscribe. That way you can get the episodes as soon as they drop. We would love for you to follow us, of course, on social media, interact with us. We'd love to talk to you. We're on X, Twitter, at the 602 Club. We're on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. You can find the entire network online on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Of course, we got our new website, tfm.fan, where you can see all the shows that are coming out on the network. And of course, if you want to talk more in depth, you can go over to the Babel Conference over on Facebook and join there and be able to talk to us. But Rye, this is one of those films, like after what came out in 87, this is a movie that just kind of languishes in development hell for an incredibly long time. And like there are so many different directors from like 2007 on that are connected to this. There's John Woo, there's John M. Chu, there's Rian Johnson, Joe Cornish, Muschietti, there's Chris Sanders, Lord and Miller. I mean,
you're getting me excited.
You know, Chris McKay, you know, like there's so many people that are involved with this, and it doesn't go anywhere and doesn't really kind of move anywhere until Amazon and MGM purchase the rights and they hire Travis Knight, who did Bumblebee. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you about this, because obviously, too, you know, even as we come into this, we kind of have to deal with the elephant in the room, which is that this movie doesn't do great at the box office. And so I wanted to know if you thought maybe that's connected with just the franchise itself. Is this a franchise that's just kind of too weird for people to really connect to if they don't have the nostalgia of, you know, knowing it from the 80s?
I think it's that's potentially true. I think that it doesn't help. We're going to talk about, I like the movie a lot, but it doesn't help that the movie is a little weird, a little like, got, you know, what people will call like Marvel humor, some corny jokes. Like that doesn't help. It doesn't get the best word of mouth. There's people that are definitely enjoying it a lot that see it, but it's not like this overwhelming praise from what I've seen. I think Travis Knight isn't like a big draw as a director. I think his animated stuff, obviously he started Laika Studios, is a huge draw, but he's not like, if Lord and Miller is making this, I think this is like a, we're having a different conversation on just the draw of the movie just in general. Cause like, oh man, Lord and Miller, they made Spider-Verse. Like we're talking a completely different situation. But I think it's just not as prevalent in like movie fandom as other things. It's, it kind of, the way it even started is not like the most common thing. It's like they had an action figure that Mattel came out with, and then it got really popular, but they had no idea who was good and who was bad. And so then someone came in, they hired somebody to like write lore, and then they made the show and so on. But it kind of like it's never been consistent. It's like something years. And then like, you know, we've had things, I guess, in the last 5 years, but they're like Netflix TV shows, which are not getting promoted, you know, like a movie or anything like that. And so I think it's a mix of different things. It's a mix of the fact that it just hasn't been a like it's always around, but it's never that like prominent. Yeah. So it's just lurking in the background. And so getting a new audience is hard when you're doing that.
Yeah, I think you put that really well. You know, it's one of those things where I do think that there's a real niche audience for this, in the sense that, you know, if you didn't grow up with it, this is an incredibly weird franchise. Yeah. You know, when you've got sword and sandals, but you've also got laser guns, and it's just like you've thrown everything in the kitchen sink into that. Mm-hmm. And you know, in some ways, like, for myself, like, I don't have an issue with that, because that's just the universe that's been created, right? And so, you know, I'm a fan of, you know, these different franchises and these different universes, and all of these different universes have their own, you know, sets of rules and all that. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't bother me, right? To have outlandish things all mashed together. And I think that's actually kind of one of the charms of the franchise, in that sense, is that it does set it apart, is it just kind of mashes everything we love together. Like, it truly does feel like a toy franchise, right? Mm-hmm. That a kid would play with, where they're doing all these weird things together, mm-hmm. you know? Which is even one of the things that I think this movie kind of picks up on, the idea that, you know, Adam has all of these names for characters, mm-hmm. right? They're not their real names, but just like a kid would, they make up the names, you know? You know, you're Fisto and you're Mechaneck, uh-huh. and, you know, you're Ram Man, because that's, as a kid, you might not remember the name on the cartoon, but you remember the kind of what the person is supposed to do, uh-huh. and so you make up your own, you know, like. So again, I think there is a real sense of like childlike play mm-hmm. to this universe and all. And 100%. So I do think that makes it really difficult. And, you know, the funny thing though for me is, when I look at all of these names, you know, I think Travis Knight was actually a great choice as director, because totally. I thought what he did with Bumblebee mm-hmm. was fantastic, because that was like, after all of the ridiculous craziness and seriousness that got layered into the Transformers films, which I think is what started to ruin them, you know, the original Transformers that Michael Bay did truly understood the silliness mm-hmm. that was involved, with a slight bit of seriousness. Yeah. And then it's like it started to take itself so seriously, it lost its mojo, and I don't think it really got it back mm-hmm. to me until Bumblebee came out mm-hmm. and recaptured the joy of the fun yeah. of that franchise. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what this film needs, because this movie, you know, we talked about the original film last week, but this movie is just completely different than the last movie, in the sense that in its story and its plot, this one actually has one, and it spends time yeah. like introducing us to characters and you know, introducing us to the world. And I think that's the thing that I was really captivated by as we came into this movie, is the way that it wants to spend time introducing us to where we are and why I should care, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think I remember. I mean, when I sat down, I was watching, and they're kind of like going through everything, the whole story and like the background of it. And he's like doing the voiceover thing. I was like, here we go. I'm like, because we talked about it. I was like, this 87 movie sucks. I promise you, the universe is way cooler than whatever the heck this is. And yeah, it is, because they did a good job explaining it. I think I agree that Travis Knight is a great director for it. I think he's has done, I mean, every movie I've seen from him is great. Like, he's Kubo and the Two Strings is, I think, a really great animated movie. I love Bumblebee, and then he's got Wildwood coming out later this year, which I'm just floored about. So,
yeah, that looks amazing.
And it's set in Portland, which, you know, I have my own thoughts on Portland, but just being set near somewhere I can be is still so nice. I just I feel so many emotions with it. But so Travis Knight, I think he's a great director. I just think what I was saying is he just doesn't have the same pull as a Lord Miller. I think he's
absolutely
great in terms of handling the franchise, handling silliness, balancing it with serious moments. There's moments in this film where I thought it was going to just lean totally silly, and it restrained itself and then went serious. And I was like, thank you, Lord, because we needed that. He-Man as a character, He-Man as a franchise is inherently kind of silly. There's hilarious, just wacko moments in the original TV show. Skeletor as a character is completely evil and sinister, but also a goofball. And they nailed a whole lot of that, and that's really hard to do. I think the way that they set this movie up in explaining the lore and spending, only some time on Earth and spending almost the entirety of the film in Eternia, I think is the way to go. Obviously, you have the budget for it, which helps, but I think it makes for a more interesting story. It kind of draws you in and makes you feel like you're a part of the world versus what we experienced with, obviously, the 87 version.
Yeah, I mean, just even thinking of what we talked about the last time is that, there's so little setup, then they throw you into this universe. This movie with its setup, we understand who Adam is as a character, which, from my understanding is much more like the cartoon, where you have this alter ego where he's just a kind of an unsure version of himself, right? This fear of not living up, his relationship with his parents, especially his father, his friendship with Teela, Duncan, Grayskull, the sorceress, this world in general, all of that I felt was really well done to bring us into the universe, especially if somebody didn't know really anything about this universe. I think it's a good introduction on that front, so that you can enjoy the rest of the movie. And, that was something that we wanted from the first movie. It's hard to get when, it's 87 and, you're with a studio who doesn't have the money and honestly doesn't care because they're just pumping out content.
Yeah.
This, I think, was so much better on every front, which you would hope that it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, you have Amazon backing it, which you should have plenty of money to be making a Masters of the Universe movie. But yeah, I mean, I immediately felt like I was back as a kid watching this show. You don't realize like we talked about how bad it was last week, but you don't realize actually how bad it is until you are actually, oh, this is Eternia. This is fun. Like you said with Adam, they do such a good job introducing his character and he's this separate person. He is not the same. He turns into this like godlike figure with the power of the sword. And I just think it's funny that they're clearly trying to make him look small when Nicholas he's huge in the long sleeve. They put him in the baggiest long sleeve ever. And him you're still ginormous, man.
You're still
which I just thought was funny, as they're trying to make him look small so that he's big as He-Man. But I appreciate that, because that's the character He-Man. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, I like that you mentioned that, because this movie really is about Adam's journey. And what I thought was so interesting about this is that, especially in the world that we are in, this movie is so much a meditation on what it means to be a man. What does it mean to be a good man? What does it mean to be a man when it comes to the idea of true masculine power and true strength and all of that? But first and foremost, I mean, you know, we start with Adam, you know, he gets thrown into our world to save him from Skeletor with the sword. And yet he's like so many young men these days who lack purpose, you know, and he's growing up in the therapy culture that is, you know, told that he should fear everything about what it means to be a man, his strength. He's kind of been emasculated because of it. And of course, he feels completely rudderless because he's lost the one thing that he was supposed to do, which is the sword. And man, being confronted with that question, I thought was fascinating for this movie to really deal with. And the way that it deals with every single one of those issues is right on target, man. Like, I was blown away by what this movie had to say about what it meant to be a man of purpose, a man of strength, a man of honor, all of it. It was right on target.
Yeah, they gave a really, like, nuanced, very balanced view of masculinity, where there's moments where I'm like, are they just going to do the thing where it's like, like, there's the moment at the end of the movie, which I was really worried because I was enjoying the action so much, which we'll talk, I'm sure, later, where He-Man's like, he goes to Skeletor, he's like, let's just have a dialogue, let's talk it out. And I'm like, please, for the love of everything that I love, if you just talk this out, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah. I'm going to lose my ever-loving mind.
Yeah, like, I was like, please, 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 please do not do this. And they didn't. Like, they... It is so clear that He-Man, because of who he is, how he's raised by his parents first and like by Man-at-Arms, and then his experience in the real world, he has this balance of like power and strength and force that has to be used at times. But also, like, he is trying to seek peace and seek understanding. And I think that's just such a nice, refreshing take on like a gigantic, you know, big muscled, powerful superhero. You know, it's like, it's cool. I appreciate it a lot. I think that, yeah, to your point with him being on Earth, it just sets everything up. I think I enjoyed all the time we spent on Earth. I think it's one of the things that was like a huge highlight is that he knew he didn't have the sword. Like, there was no like amnesia thing, and he stumbles upon it and he's like, oh, this is the thing, and I'm now transported. Or like, Teela had to come and tell him that you're He-Man, you need this sword. Like, no, he knew he wanted it. It was his, part of his purpose, and he had to find it, which made for, I mean, the scene in the store where he's like, are you my sword guy? I was cracking up. Like, that was so funny.
Yeah.
So I just like how they handled his character, him being in like human resources. So he's like this person who cares deeply about people and about justice and peace and, you know, all these things. But he's also like powerful and he's strong and he's not afraid to use force against evil. And I think that's just so great. Like, that is I was not expecting it from the Masters of the Universe movie.
Well, and I think what's really interesting is that I think with Adam, and kind of he learns this incredibly beautiful truth of like what it means to be a true man, which is that there's two sides. There's the working aspect and there's the keeping. And in working, right, he kind of gets that on Earth, the idea of nurturing and cultivating and building and guiding, especially relationally, right? And then what he learns from his father and from his men at arms, you know, and Duncan, is this idea of keeping, which you have the power as a man to protect and sustain what you love, right? And the beauty of that is that it juxtaposes him perfectly with Skeletor, who only craves power for himself and his own benefit. And so you get this wonderful picture of that true masculinity is about using the power that we've been given as men for the benefit and protection of others, mm-hmm. that it is a self-sacrificial action, you know? And power is not meant to be controlled in a way that is only for my benefit. Because I also love that there's that moment in the movie where Adam learns that the power that he has, if it's not controlled correctly, it can harm mm-hmm. others. Like, he inadvertently, with the power he has, kills his father.
Right.
And so I thought that that was really something beautiful about the film, is that, again, this is about, it's like, it's the definition of the word meek, which is mm-hmm. power under control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who Adam learns who he needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is a moment for war and there is a moment for peace. You got to have wisdom to know the difference between the two. And it's just one of those things where you put all this together and then you get the funny conversation, you know, that he has with Dolph Lundgren, who tells him, you know, it's really not about what's on the outside.
Yeah.
It is about what's on the inside. Because good character matters, and that determines how a man will utilize his power. And you do all of that, and you have all of this in a blender. And again, I just couldn't believe that there is a movie made by Hollywood that was truly understanding what it means to be a good man in this way. And actually, not just telling us, but really showing us all of these aspects. I was blown away by it. Like, I just couldn't believe that we were getting this in Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, it was surprising. Like, I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't necessarily that. And I kind of fell in love with it too, where I'm looking at like the writers of this movie, and it's like, you got a couple guys, like two brothers, Aaron and Adam Nee, who seem like newer. They've only written like The Lost City, that was fine. But then you got like Chris Butler, who's a guy who writes clearly for Laika. He's written Paranorman, and he wrote Wildwood and Kubo and the Two Strings, like movies that have some real substance. And then they have another guy, David Callahan, who is a writer on Across the Spider-Verse, and he's a writer on Shang-Chi, like movies that get like have this like actual nuance to characters. And you could easily get, like, they could have easily just hired some, you know, run-of-the-mill guy to write the Masters of the Universe movie, and it would have been basic and probably still pretty fun, but like there wouldn't have been anything to chew on after. But instead we did get this really, yeah, nuanced character that is struggling to learn how to be a man. He's struggling, how do I use my power for good? When is the time to use power, like in like a violent way, and like protect? When is the time to restrain myself? Like, you're talking about this meekness. And I think it's like one of the biggest shocks of the year so far for me in a movie, where I'm like, I can't believe this. Like, I understand, like, you could say a lot about, like, I do think the movie's got some jokes where I'm like, come on, like, give me a 100%. Break. Like, when they're walking through the smoke and then they start coughing, like,
yeah.
When he drives the bike thing backwards, I'm like,
yeah,
I get you're trying to write a joke for a 10-year-old, but come on, man. So there's those moments that I'm like, yeah, fair, that I don't like that. But I think it's a huge surprise that we're getting this in-depth character study of a young man learning what it means to be a man, not just in the context of Eternia, but with the context of current, you know, 2026 Earth. Western ideas infused into a character, and how does he become this character that is someone to look to versus just like a big buff guy?
Well, and I think that the beauty of this is that Nicholas Galazine does a great job of embodying all this, right? Because I think he does a perfect job of being the directionless, purposeless character. I think he does a great job of being the one who is unsure about having this power and how to utilize it. And I think he then does a great job of being the character who embodies the power when he has to use it against evil,
mm-hmm.
right? And I thought the casting here is just so good with him, and he's just so likable in every instance, right? Because I think the beginning of the film and the way that he plays it could come off really badly. And yet I thought a lot of the choices he makes were spot on. And there, like you said, there are places in some of the jokes that, 100% go too far and taking, it's like, I'll put it this way. There are some of the jokes that kind of come on Thor Love and Thunder level. Where it's like too much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not to the point where it totally ruins the film for me, because there are only a couple of moments where I think they really just take it over the top too far. For the most part, you get great performances in this film, mm-hmm. and one of them, the biggest key, is Nicholas, and I think he just delivers on every level that you need him to bring this character to life and to make him incredibly likable, because mm-hmm. he goes through a lot in this film, and I thought he did a great job of pulling all the nuance that you need for this character together.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he's a big standout. I think there's one other gigantic standout in the movie from a character standpoint. But I remember when he got cast, and I'd seen him in some movies that I liked. I thought he was very funny. I thought he was a very charming guy, but he wasn't very big, and he clearly got big. And so I was hesitant. How is he going to handle this character? This is a big deal. This character I care a lot about. Clearly Dolph Lundgren was a crapshoot of a version of him. When we really got into the film and I'm seeing his portrayal of He-Man and of Adam, I'm like, they really nailed it with the casting. He is so good. He's charming. He's funny. He's has this presence about his leadership and his authority when he's in those serious moments. I'm like, yeah, man, they really got the guy to it's not the greatest script in the world, but he's just killing it from start to finish. I was shocked and also just thrilled watching him each scene. I'm like, this yeah. guy's this he's the yeah. best.
Well, and it's interesting because there are a couple of different people in the film, that are the friends of Eternia, right? The people that really mean the most to Adam, whether it's Teela or Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really important to the movie,
yeah.
right? And their goal is not to overshadow He-Man or Adam, but to help him along the way. And man, Camila Mendes was just such a breath of fresh air as this character, because she's incredibly competent, but there was something really beautiful about her portrayal in the sense that for her, Adam was her best friend, as a kid, and he means so much to her, and I just thought every moment of her portrayal, she's never over the top and she never overshadows the main character, mm-hmm. but she plays perfectly alongside of him. And that's something where I feel like in so many of these types of movies, right, you kind of have a main character who is male get overshadowed by a character that's female. And I felt like instead of doing it, they actually complement each other perfectly mm-hmm. for the movie in the way that they're written. And in that, it was really well done. And she, I think, pulls it off perfectly because she's just such a wonderful, fun person to be on this ride with. And kind of she's in some ways our eyes into Eternia.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I thought she was great.
Yeah, I think she's really good too. I think you said it well when you said she's a perfect pairing, very good compliment to him, because and I do think they do a really good job kind of like giving her ability to like have like free reign almost to like be this like good character, to be like very, she's a very powerful woman and she's very strong, and I appreciate that. But like you said, she doesn't overpower. She's not like, if it's a movie about her, great, fine, be as up there. But it's about He-Man. Like this movie, this universe is about He-Man. And like you said, like Hollywood's got this idea sometimes that like, well, yeah, it's about this guy, but like, here's this underseen, you know, female character that needs some more light, which maybe that could be true. But I feel like they gave her a lot to work with. I feel like they gave her the ability to shine, but also still made the movie about He-Man and Skeletor. Like it was nice to see like a strong female character who's clearly not the main point of the movie, just still shine, still have her moments. Still, I mean, she's funny as well. I think there's moments I'm like, she's got some pretty good comedic timing with some of the things she said, particularly her jokes, her one-liners landed more for me than He-Man's. I enjoyed her a lot. So she was pretty good.
Well, and I mean, on top of that, I think Idris Elba just delivers on every level that he needs to, as well as Duncan. I thought he is so good just at being funny,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think part of that is just him playing against type, you know?
Yeah.
To be the guy who, you know, turns into the drunk, you know? But what was beautiful about him, and again, as a character, is that he is the one who helps Adam understand his purpose as a man with all of this strength and what to do with it and the why behind it. And I loved that. And again, Elba has all the gravitas that's needed, that even when he's at his lowest, he's somebody you listen to.
Yeah.
You know, he's somebody you gravitate towards mm-hmm. as a character. Yeah. And part of that is just who he is as a person, you know? And I love that they got him for this role, because I think it was incredibly important for, you need that care. I mean, like, in some ways, you know, when you think of the hero's journey, Elba and Mendes kind of play a combination of the wizened character, you know, mm-hmm. on the hero's journey. Yeah. And they play kind of two sides of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they are then utilized for Adam to find his full potential. And so, yeah, man, I just love him in this movie. I thought he's great.
Yeah, I like Idris Elba a lot. He is pretty much good in everything he does. He reminded me a lot of, in certain moments, he reminded me a lot of his Pacific Rim character, just like this leader that like is teaching and has like this, you know, this wisdom to him. I think the drunk part, I think it got better. At first I was like, why are we doing the drunk thing? But I was charmed by Idris. So it kind of won me over, just from his performance and his ability to kind of just, you know, you could tell that he's kind of having fun out there. Which is always going to make me, enjoy a performance more, where I'm like, you know, maybe he's not my favorite. Maybe I would have done him a little bit different. But they kind of threaded the needle through, like, adding some comedic elements to him from, like, Man at Arms in the show. And then still kind of nailed that aspect of, like, his wisdom and his kind of, like, teaching nature to Adam. And I think it worked really well. And that's what happens when you get a guy like Idris to do it, who didn't seem to phone it in or and really looked like he was having fun, cared about the role a whole lot.
I like what you just said there, because I think it was incredibly important for the role. He believes that he's a part of all of this, right? Mm-hmm. And he is not making light of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. Actually, I think both he and Mendez do the same thing, where it's like they just are bought in. They're locked in in their role, and they take it with enough seriousness that when all the crazy stuff is happening, you're never thrown out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because the character is earnest, right? There's an earnestness to this film in that way that I think is incredibly important to. So you need everybody to, I think, have that. And I think there, like we've talked about, there are a couple of moments where that humor almost pulls you out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time,
yeah,
the performances by somebody like, you know, Elba or Nicholas or Camilla are kind of pulling you back in with just the earnestness of their portrayal, which, you know, I think on the other side of this, you know, we've got to talk about the bag of bones in the room, yeah, which is, you know, Jared Leto is, uh-huh, is Skeletor. And Jared Leto, you know, people don't like him.
I'm one of them. I don't like,
you know,
him.
and for good reason. He's there's a lot of reasons that people just don't like him. But was he not the perfect choice for Skeletor?
Gosh, he was so good. Like, I get you can't, like, you can kind of hear his voice a little bit if you, like, really pay attention. But I think I was really pleased to learn that he's, like, in a suit. Like, this is not a CGI thing, apparently, that he's wearing a muscle suit and he's doing the physical performance, which only adds to his performance because he's so good. Oh, my goodness. Like, Skeletor in the, like, show, like, in, like, 80s show is, like, this zany, silly, extremely evil. Don't get me wrong. He's extremely evil. He's a true bad guy. But he's, like, he's just funny and kooky. And I can't believe they nailed it. And I can't believe it's, I have to say, like, you know, it's like the joke. It's, like, unfortunately, the worst person you know is actually amazing. Because he is so, he's so good. He's perfectly evil. Like he, you know, at the end of the movie, he's like, actually, no, I want to fight you. Let's do this. He's like, the jokes he's doing, the one-liners he has. I mean, just over and over and over again, I'm like, perfectly killed this. I can't, like, I was, like, awestruck. The fact, like, the scene at the end where he's, like, fighting Adam and they take him into, like, the real world, and it's like Skeletor and, like, working out and, like,
in the
button up. I was cracking up. Like, that was so funny.
Yeah, I thought that was great too.
Jared Leto's so good. Like, it's such a good performance. Like,
100%.
Physicality wise, now that I know that. And then the voice is great. Obviously, it's digitally altered, but yeah, it's so much fun. Oh my goodness. I could talk about it for so long. It's so good.
Yeah. No, I mean, I honestly couldn't put it any better. Like, everything you said is so spot on, and there's a real beauty, I think, to the performance. And another part of this film with the portrayal of Skeletor that I couldn't believe that they did. And it really goes to, you know, the storyline here, what we've been talking about, like, nailing all of these really important thematic elements. The juxtaposition between our world and the world of Eternia, right, was perfect in the sense that, like, Adam's like, look, I don't, you know, at the end when he's trying to talk it out with Skeletor, he's like, you know, I don't know if, you know, you weren't loved enough as a kid or if it is something, you know, you just couldn't be a king or whatever, you know, like, but Skeletor's like, it's none of those things. I love evil.
I'm the bad guy.
I am evil for the evil's sake. Like,
yeah.
And the beauty of that is that, you know, Skeletor is a character. He's the personification of death and selfishness and cruelty and destruction. You know, he's like the living picture of Dorian Gray, right? What happens when evil just, you know, begins to eat away at you, which I thought was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of this film is that what the movie is saying, evil is not to be tolerated. You don't talk to it, you destroy it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it brings to mind that idea of, like, we put to death sin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like we don't, you know, the beautiful illustration of, like, you know, you don't treat, like, evil as, you know, a dog to be played with, because what it is a lion who's going to destroy you.
Right.
And I thought that was absolutely brilliant, and they pull it off perfectly, right,
yeah,
in this film.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I think there's a lot that could be said. This kind of reignited my love for He-Man in a way that I wasn't prepared for, where I texted my tattoo artist. I was like, hey, next time we do something, here's a sword that will be done. Like, I love He-Man so much, especially because, like, it this idea of, like, defeating evil, killing it, like, just fully, like, without a shadow of a doubt. And because you pair that with all these, you know, themes of who He-Man is by the power of Grayskull. Oh my, I'm just like, I just think about, where's the cross, the place of the skull, Golgotha, the power of that. Oh my goodness. Then He-Man's like the power, like this sword that is to defeat evil. Actually, plot twist, that sword's power actually lives inside of you. Oh my, I'm just like,
because you've been chosen to be.
Oh my, I'm just sitting,
the one
I'm just
that has the power.
I'm like, about, it's like the standing ovation meme where I'm like, it's like I wanted to just stand up in the theater and just start clapping. I was so jazzed about it. Because that's He-Man. Like, if you look up, like, the history of He-Man, I was reading an article. It's called, like, what is it called? It's called, oh, here we go. How the Hebrew Bible helped me write He-Man. And it's the guy who was tasked by Mattel with creating the lore around him. And he uses stories from the Bible, from the Old Testament, which obviously we know are all about, like, the Old Testament is all about Jesus. So of course this character is just infused with, like, Christocentric themes and, like, it, yeah. So I think watching that and seeing Skeletor be fully evil, and then you have this great man who has this balanced and nuanced version of, like, true masculinity almost. And then where does he get this power from? It's from Grayskull. It's from this thing, the sword that actually lives inside you, and you use the sword against evil. I'm like, dude, I am, like, loving every second of this. And it's so good. Like, it makes me forget about everything I think is bad. Because there's, like, this movie's not perfect by any means.
Yeah, 100%.
But I don't remember any of it, because I'm like, the stuff I love.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, and I think one of the places where I was thinking, you know, you have the two villains, you know, you've got Skeletor and then you have Evil Lyn. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting parts of this is that, you know, casting Alison Brie as Evil Lyn was perfect casting. You know, she can just chew up scenery. But if there's one thing about the movie is I felt like they just didn't really give her enough to do. It
yeah.
almost just felt like she has to be there to be there, instead of, like, giving her a more specific purpose for existence in the movie. And I wish that she had more of that, because, again, I think she's able to embody exactly what you need that character to be. They just don't actually have enough for her to do in the script.
Yeah, she's a good actress. I think she's a really good actress. But yeah, it feels like, I know this isn't her, because I don't think she did this, because she's not the type of, I think, actress to, but the performance feels phoned in, because I think they gave her nothing. I mean, there's, like, weird moments yeah. in the script where, like, I was excited for her and Teela to fight, and they were fighting, and then all of a sudden, when Skeletor and He-Man start fighting, they're just, like, sitting in the background watching, and I'm like, what is going on? Which is, like, whatever, fine. I don't, like, it's, that's okay, I guess. But, yeah, I like Alison Brie a lot. I think she's a great actress. But, yeah, she was given nothing to do. She was just there to be choked by Skeletor every once in a while, which was, like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Give me more to do, please.
Well, you know, Yeah, there. I mean, there's one aspect where I think that she, you know, she is the person, right? And this is where it's like there would have, it would have been nice to have just a little bit more, because she's the person who aligns themselves with evil, so that they can kind of get what they want.
Yeah,
you know, and I think, you know, in some ways you can tell that the character Evil Lyn is in love with Skeletor,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And yet, you know, he's the toxic boyfriend. You know, he is the one who just mistreats her and uses her and will cast her aside if he needed to. And, you know, I think, you know, there's that moment of realization in the end that for her, you know, she's just trying to get away because she realizes he doesn't care, you know?
Yeah.
And everything, and this isn't about her anymore, and she's chosen the wrong side, and so I do think it just could have been done better, and especially if you're going to cast somebody like her, I think it's worth, you know, giving her more to do. But something I would ask you about, because this movie has a lot about to talk or to listen. Mm. And there's this moment in his time on Earth where Adam is like, you know, everybody wants to truth talk, but nobody wants to truth listen or listen to the truth.
Yeah.
And I thought that there was something really profound in this, because it's like everybody wants to give their truth, but nobody actually wants to listen to the truth. And again, for a movie, Masters of the Universe, to talk about this idea that truth is more than just what I say it is, that there is an actual truth out there, which is what we kind of come to with the whole idea of good versus evil in the movie, was really fascinating to me. And I almost, it's one of those things where it's like, again, this theme, turn it up a little, just a little bit more, because that's incredibly profound for this movie to be saying.
Yeah. Another thing I was surprised by, like, it's played as like a funny moment, but it's really true. He's like, we all want a truth talk. No one wants the truth listen. Like, that's really funny. Because it's true. Like, nobody wants to listen to what actually is true about the world and about good and evil. And I think that getting it said by this character it's well done. I think it's moments where it's not only just like said, but it's displayed of like the truth will win, like the true, the good, the beautiful, it will come out on top, essentially. So I liked it a lot. I was a big fan. I think it just continues to add to Adam's character, which is a huge highlight, obviously, for us.
Yeah. Yeah. A huge part of this, and you know, one of the things that was such a detriment to the first live-action version of this universe was the world creation, you know, bringing it all to life. And, you know, here, of course, you've got all of these creatures, talking titers, Eternia, all the VFX that go into that, and the practical effects and everything else. So how did that all work for you? Because, you know, again, that was just a huge part of the disappointment for the first movie.
Yeah, I think it works well. I don't think it's perfect. I think like Cringer and like all these like, you know, characters that Adam, you know, gives funny names to, I think that's a really fun way to do it. Obviously, I think there's an element of it where there's like either two reasons they did that. It's either like they're playing into like this childlikeness and like it's just how they're trying to get him to remember, or it's Mattel being like, yeah, I get we made really stupid names for characters in the 80s, which I think is like, I don't like if it's that, I don't like that, because like just own it. You made these characters that like, there's Star Wars characters names that are dumb, but it's just what it is. Like, it's just what they named them in the 80s, who cares? Be proud of your characters. So there's an element of that I'm like wrestling with, like, did you do that because you hate the names, or are you just adding fun lore? And I'm going to choose to believe fun lore, because that's just what a kid would do. Like, you know, he would just, you know, Mechaneck, Fisto. Why? Because you use your fist. Like, so I enjoy that. I enjoy all the, I think they do a good job with all the characters. I think do a good job of, like, Eternia and, like, capturing the world that it's in. I think the VFX are good. Like, there's moments that are spotty, of course. I do think, like, one of the biggest downfalls of the movie is, like, it looks serviceable, but it doesn't look, like, amazing. Like, it's pretty just, like, kind of sludgy and gray. It needs to be more vibrant. I think it does a good job still. It doesn't take me out of the movie or anything like that. But if I were to nitpick and be like, what do I want different? It would be, I want more of, like, the this vibrancy and like, you know, the 87 movie sucks and it takes place on Earth, but it looks good. And from like, just like a visual perspective, not like the VFX at all, but just like in the real world, because it's just made like movies looked better in the 80s. And so I still enjoyed it. It didn't take me out of it. I am frankly nitpicking a little bit, with the visual look, but I thought they brought everybody to life really well, and I love the characters. They're silly and fun, and I think the world of Eternia is great, and I hope we see more.
Yeah, I think that for the most part, the world creation, I mean, obviously it is leaps and bounds better than anything we got in the first version. And that's not surprising, right? Just because even what you can do is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, there's clearly places where it could have been better, especially when you think of, you know, I think Cringer doesn't look great.
Yeah, it's not the best.
Part of I think the fact that he's not in the movie very often is specifically, you know, because of the cost involved in putting something that like that on screen. And there's so much else that they're trying to do. They just don't have the money to really dig into what's going to make a good looking, you know, talking tiger, especially of that size. But like, I'm never pulled out to the point where it ruins the film for mm-hmm. me. And a big part of that is that so much of this is so cartoony in the first place.
Yeah.
That it helps, right? Right. It helps that Eternia is kind of this cartoon-like world. And so therefore the vibrancy and everything like that is fine. Yeah. You know, and I think there are a lot of places like when they're in the forest, you know, you can actually tell that they created like a forest soundstage mm-hmm. that I thought felt more real than in some places like that. So I liked the work they did. And like you said, I'm hoping for more. I would like to see more in this world mm-hmm. and maybe we'll get it, you know, because Amazon loves to pour money into things that aren't good, like, you know, the Rings of Power show. So like, can we just get that put into some more He-Man, because I'd rather that. Anyway, I wanted to ask you about this, because we talked about this with the first movie, with the music, and here the music is Daniel Pemberton, who obviously, you know, he's done so many good things, whether it's like The Man from U.N.C.L.E., or you think of his work with the Spider-Verse, mm-hmm. You know, he's got a really nice resume building these days, and dude, this is a rock-infused rock opera. I mean, Brian May, the guitarist for Queen, is even working with him in certain tracks. And I gotta say, it's gangbusters awesome. I love this score. I think it's outlandish in all the right ways.
It's so good. I've been listening to it all week. Like, it is, like, there's just track after track after track. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, he's one of the best working composers, obviously, but it's amazing. It adds to the film. It's fun. It's, you know, the more orchestral stuff, like opera-esque stuff. And then you have like rock and roll in there. I'm just like, this is so, like, he clearly, very, very clearly understood the universe of the Masters of the Universe and Eternia and all this stuff. And he perfectly just encapsulated it into this score. And it was awesome. It was great. I had a blast with it. I have like a movie scores playlist, and I added some songs that I thought were some real highlights to that just on the rotation. So,
dude, that's awesome, man. Yeah, I love it. I'm with you. I've been, you know, listening to it, and I think it's fantastic. And it just, again, it's one of those things that I think truly adds to the film. You know, in a lot of movies, right, the score just takes it to another level.
Yeah.
And I think Pemberton's score here helps take so much of this to mm-hmm. another level. And so we've got to talk about some cameos with the Dolph Lundgren, Orko, and then, of course, the big reveal at the very, very end mm-hmm. with She-Ra. Yeah. How did those work for you? Did you think that they were well done? And did you know, were you glad that they added them into this film?
Yeah, I think they clearly wanted to do, Dolph Lundgren, different than Orko and She-Ra, obviously. Fun, cool. I don't care that much. Like, if that movie was better, maybe I would like it more. Like, I didn't think mm-hmm. it was bad. I thought it was funny. I was like, that's cute. Like, that's nice. I like that. And I think, like, the way they did it, like, the funny, like, how you know, what should I do? What would you give advice to the new guy? It's like, that's funny. And he gives some good advice. So I enjoyed it. Orko is a character that's really cool from the show, and I just would love to see more of him. And so that's like a part of the reason that I would love to see more is like, I want more Orko. He does some really cool things in the show from what I remember. And then same with She-Ra. She was a sick character, the twin of He-Man. And like, I'm excited for the, like, yeah, like this movie's probably not going to do super well, but thankfully it's Amazon and they throw money at the wall all the time because they got it all. So hopefully they just keep pumping out some stuff. And I'd take a She-Ra movie. Like, She-Ra's awesome from all that I remember. So what did you think about these cameos?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, like you said, they work. They're fine. Like, there's nothing that it's taken away by the film. And you know, again, the fact that it's clear that they would like to utilize, you know, She-Ra in the future, I think is great. I think, you know, having a movie with her and He-Man and Teela all together would be really, mm-hmm. really cool, yeah. You know, and I think you do have a built-in villain that you could utilize with, you know, Evil Lyn, where she could be the main villain maybe in the next film. That might be really interesting. So all in all, on that side, like, it's great. I'm sold. And even just kind of like the look of the character of She-Ra, it's like, wow, they really just nailed what you saw in the cartoon in that sense, you know? And I think that was another thing, you know, when we talked about the world creation, like, just all of the costuming was fantastic, you know, and I felt like they didn't shy away from celebrating what you saw in the cartoon, mm-hmm. you know, and so I thought that was fun. I mean, even the joke that he makes, like, what happened to my clothes? Like, I had to buy new clothes every time, you know? Which is such a wonderful, like, superhero joke, you know, like, when you, especially when you think of, like, something like the Hulk. So, but no, I love that. Well, I love this too. Like, you added this, and mm-hmm. you wanted to know where this kind of ranked in fantasy films. So I was looking around, kind of thinking about what are some other movies, and the only movies that I can really think of that have come out recently in this genre that we had Dungeons and Dragons a few years ago. We had you know, like Red Sonja came out last year. And you know, we haven't had a ton of these type of films, you know, and then, I mean, you guess you've got like your Clash of the Titans type of thing. You know, you've got your old school stuff like Lord of the Rings and Dragonheart and, you know, I don't know. So, where would you put this kind of in the pantheon of films of that nature?
Yeah, I was looking at some lists as well. Like, obviously, Lord of the Rings, like How to Train Your Dragons, kind of in that vein. Another, like, Harry Potter could be considered. Wicked, I guess, kind of.
Legend.
Yeah, Aragorn, you know.
Labyrinth.
You know, so.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Because there are a lot of great ones. Obviously, the ones that we remember the most are the ones that are obviously the best. So it's like, where does it rank? Yeah, it's not as good as Lord of the Rings. Like, yeah, let's be honest. But I do think, like, in terms of recent stuff, like with, you know, some of the – a couple Hobbit movies or one Hobbit movie with, like, The Golden Compass and, like, The Honor Among Thieves, yeah. Which I like that movie. I think this is, like – some of the best stuff we've got in terms of like the fantasy genre. It's like a very untapped genre currently, and I had a blast with it. And so I don't think it's perfect, but it's better than a lot of what we've got. It's better than, you know, Twilight and you know, these like weird fantasy movies that we've gotten in the last 10 or so years. And it's, I think it's in the category of like The Honor Among Thieves, where it's like, man, I did not think this was going to be good at all. And here I am talking about it with like, it's like one of my favorite things ever. It's a great step in the right direction for the genre of fantasy.
Yeah. I like what you said there. Like to me, when I've been telling people about this movie, I have been comparing it to Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Dungeons and Dragons was one of the biggest surprises of that year when it came out. Like my wife and I went and saw that in 2023, and we were just kind of like in some ways floored because we didn't know what to expect at all.
Yep.
And then we saw that and we were like, oh, my goodness, this is just so fun.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the thing that this movie really encapsulates, right? It encapsulates fun. And it's not afraid to have fun. And so I'm really thankful of that. And so, like we mentioned, this movie has places where I think it takes itself some of that a little bit too far.
Mm-hmm.
It probably needed to reel it in a little bit, but still love it.
Yeah.
I'm really interested then, where are you going to land with the ratings for Masters of the Universe?
Yeah. I think I love this movie. It kind of reignited like a love for He-Man for me. But it does have problems like we've talked about. But I mean, most of the stuff we talked about was positive. And so I am giving it a 4 with like a Letterboxd heart, where like a little extra boost where like, yeah, it's got some issues. It's not perfect by any means. But boy, do I love a lot of it. And do I think they nailed their two most important characters? And then does it have themes that I just will be thinking about for the rest of the year in movies? So 4-star with a heart, loved it. Where are you landing?
Dude, right there with you. This is a 4, and it deserves to be. I don't think that the movie will ever eclipse that. It's never going to go above a 4. Because of the things that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it's just so much fun, yeah. Dude. And I really, really loved it. I couldn't believe going into this, I had no clue that this might be this.
Yeah. No, not at all.
And man, what a surprise, what a treat. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so sad that more people aren't seeing this movie and responding to it. So hopefully people listening to this, if you haven't seen it, dude, go see it. I think you do yourself a favor. And I also think this is a film that you can take, you know, most of the family to. You probably need to be at least 8, you know, to see this film. Uh-huh. But otherwise, you know, it's super fun. So, Rye, we've got so much coming up this summer. I mean, next week is Disclosure Day. We've got, Supergirl, and we're going to talk about Toy Story 5 at some point. Mm-hmm. And we've got Nolan's new The Odyssey, just so many things coming out. So if people wanted to catch up with you and talk to you, where would they find you?
Yeah, on all platforms, X, Twitter, Letterboxd, Instagram, Rye Talks Movies, RYTALKS Movies. You can find me chatting about stuff and posting, and you know, the definitely the place to go to see what I'm watching, what I'm engaging with the most is definitely Letterboxd.
Awesome, man. Of course, for me, all over social media, it's MattRushing02, so just search for that. If I'm on that platform, I'd love to talk to you. Of course, here on the network, lots of great Star Trek talk with Chris Jones. You can also find me on the Nerd Party Network with two shows. One's Owl Post. Every single chapter of the Harry Potter series was talked about there, and Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But thank you so much for joining us.
And y'all come back now, you hear?